This is Side 5 of Macular Degeneration, The Complete Guide to Saving and Maximizing Your Sight by Lilas G. Mock, M.D. and Marja Mock, Ph.D. Continuation of Part 2, Experiencing AMD. Continuation of Chapter 6, With the Heart, One Sees Rightly, Living Fully with AMD. Continuing on page 190. Your reader for this side is Carolyn Rhodes. A word on driving. If you live in a car-centered area, like most suburban communities, and you lose your driver's license, you may be at greater risk of depression. Cars are often central to our lives. It's beyond inconvenient not to be able to drive. It can rob us of our spontaneity, and it can be discouraging and isolating. As John Patrick Reynolds put it bluntly, "You might as well shoot me. Why do I want to live if I can't drive?" If you share John's feeling, or even a fraction of it, it's essential to seek out alternatives to driving in your area. See Chapter 13, Saving Sight on the Road, Driving, Alternatives, and Traveling, for suggestions. If you are considering relocating, choose a home within an accessible distance of shops, your friends, and your places of work, volunteering, and worship. Homes near bus or rail stops, near lighted crosswalks, with good sidewalks, and within an easy walk of town are ideal. Senior communities with free transit services are also ideal. Do not choose a place that will isolate you. Why you can't always strong-arm your way out. Many seniors make the mistake of thinking they should strong-arm their way out of depression. Worse, they think that if they can't strong-arm their way out, there's something wrong with them. Worst of all, they think they just have to live with it. People often come to my office to talk about their vision. They say, "Well, I guess I just have to make the best of it," then set their jaws and look away. Sometimes the gentlest people cry, and sometimes the proudest people cry, as Grace Olson did. They don't mean they have to make the best of low vision. They mean they have to make the best of being depressed with low vision. But depression is not something you want to put up with and embrace as a partner in life. It's bad for your physical health, your emotional health, and your spirit. Depression can also negatively affect your relationships with other people and strain your marriage. Don't decide that you just have to make the best of depression, and don't camouflage it. There are two reasons why you may not be able to strong-arm your way out of depression, and neither of them has anything to do with being weak. First, depression is a real physiological condition, not just a mindset or a bad attitude. Research suggests that stressful situations and significant losses in our lives affect the production and regulation of chemicals in our brains that influence our emotional state and our immune system. Once you are depressed, you may remain depressed if you do not receive professional help and take direct action, because the balance of chemicals in your brain may actually promote your depression, or at least sustain it. Second, if your depression was triggered by loneliness, isolation, or inactivity, it is unlikely to lift from thinking alone. You need to address the root of the problem. Treating depression. The more you do, the better. The first thing you should do, however, is talk to your doctor, then act on the following suggestions with his or her advice. Bullet: ask your doctor about antidepressant medications and alternatives, like St. John's wort, a mild herbal remedy popular in Europe. St. John's wort has fewer side effects than medication and may be less expensive, but it also may affect your blood pressure. Bullet: if you are sensitive to sugar, ask your doctor about switching to a balanced, protein-based diet designed to keep your blood sugar levels stable. Bullet: begin a regular routine of physical exercise. (Parentheses) See the suggestions under Live Through Exercise. (Parentheses) Exercise acts on our brain chemicals to stabilize our moods, and has been shown to be an effective antidote for mild to moderate depression in many people. Bullet: attend a visual rehabilitation program in your area. (Parentheses) See Appendix A for a guide to finding one, in parentheses, and follow the program in Part 3 of this book. Bullet: Cultivate activities, interests, and friends. Making new friends may seem difficult, especially if you've had the same friends for decades and you're out of practice, and low vision doesn't make it easier. But when friends move or pass away, or when your spouse dies, it's really important to reconnect with others, and you can do it. Loneliness and inactivity are not good for you, and you must do whatever you can to avoid them. Consider moving to an active senior center if there is no one to socialize with and not much to do in your area. Bullet: Seek alternatives for getting around town. See Chapter 13. Bullet: Seek professional counseling, especially counseling that complements your visual rehabilitation by understanding your feelings and encouraging your skills. Bullet: Join a support group. If you live with someone who has low vision and you are experiencing depression yourself, you need to join a support group too. You are in good community, the AMD community. The macular degeneration community in the United States has millions of members. If you have macular degeneration, you are in good company. You may be 60 or you may be 100. You may be a homemaker, small business owner, journalist, national masters swimmer, retired trucker, engineer, parent, grandparent, or great-grandparent, a famous painter like Georgia O'Keeffe, an actress like Phyllis Diller, or a former first lady like Lady Bird Johnson. You may have just discovered that you have macular degeneration, or you may have been living with it for decades. Whoever you are and whatever your vision, there are many, many people in the United States who share this condition with you. They're right in your neighborhood, and they're all across the country, too. Memoirs by People with Vision Loss. In the last few years, people with macular degeneration and vision loss from other eye conditions have begun to write about their experiences, reaching out to others with low vision and telling the world the way it is. Journalist Henry Gunwald published his memoir, Twilight: Losing Sight, Gaining Insight, about his experience with macular degeneration, and poet Stephen Cusisto published his collection of poems, Only Bread, Only Light, and his autobiography, Planet of the Blind, about his experience of partial blindness since childhood. Activist and writer Georgina Clegg wrote Sight Unseen, a strong critique of our understandings of vision and vision loss. And John Hull wrote Touching the Rock, a moving account of his experience of total blindness in midlife. Some old favorites are also still in print, including Francis Leaf Nair's edited volume of stories and reflections by people with macular degeneration, Perceiving the Elephant. See Appendix A for a complete bibliography. Macular Degeneration Organizations. There are three major associations founded by and for people with macular degeneration: AMD, MDI, and MDP. The Association for Macular Diseases, AMD, started 20 years ago as a support group in New York City. Today, AMD has thousands of members nationwide. Under the leadership of Nikolai Stevenson, who gives wonderful speeches around the country about his experience with macular degeneration and low vision, AMD publishes a large print quarterly newspaper with tips and research updates and provides other services. You can join AMD by calling 212-605-3719 or visiting www.macula.org. Tom Persky, M.A., who has low vision from Stargardt's disease, the juvenile form of macular degeneration, founded Macular Degeneration International, MDI, in Tucson in 1991 for people with Stargardt's and age-related macular degeneration. MDI has thousands of members worldwide and offers a large print biannual news journal with research updates, programs at their Tucson facility, and free seminars around the country. You can join MDI by calling 800-393-7634 or visiting www.maculardegeneration.org. The Macular Degeneration Partnership, MDP, a Los Angeles coalition of physicians, patients, and families, works to educate doctors about visual rehabilitation. MDP offers a monthly online newsletter and email subscription service, AMD Update, and will also answer any questions you may have after visiting their website information pages at www.amd.org or listening to their recorded information at 888-430-9898, where you can also leave a message. AMD Internet Communities. If you have Internet access, join MD Support at www.mdsupport.org, a vibrant online community founded by Dan Roberts in Kansas City, Missouri, who also has low vision from a macular condition. MD Support has hundreds of members across North America and England and offers timely information and the kind of understanding that others can give only after they've been there themselves. Have a computer software question? Heard a new report on submacular surgery? Harried by worries about financial security? Need tips for handling colleagues or clients? Feeling like you're not going to make it through this? Found new ways to do something? Fallen in love again? Started a new life? Share it with MD Support through their email list group or internet message board. It's like having a huge worldwide staff, says Roberts. Everyone sharing support and information, working for the benefit of everyone else and for themselves too. There's no more powerful way to feel good about yourself and your life than to help others. There are also several excellent personal sites posted by people with macular degeneration. Parentheses. See Appendix A for web addresses. In parentheses. Judy Prevost of Quebec, an active member and volunteer for MD Support, hosts Judy's Jolts of Hope, a searingly honest, inspiring memoir of her experience of sudden vision loss from wet AMD. Judy expresses the experience of so many people with AMD and shares with us the jolts, the tips, thoughts, and turning points that moved her from despair to hope. Fellow Canadians Brian Heron of Ontario and Linda Olson of British Columbia, parentheses, no relation to Grace Olson, in parentheses, also have great sites. I recently contacted Linda about her experience with macular degeneration, and I wanted to share her words with you. Linda Olson's story. For an otherwise independent baby boomer bachelor or bachelorette like me, everything seems impossible when vision loss happens. With nobody else around to help pull out a splinter, set the alarm clock, or find lost keys, the impossible stretches out forever. I was an executive assistant, and 90% of my job was reading. I remember panicking about having to learn a whole new skill, reading with low vision, and wondering how I would be able to afford the rent for my apartment on the kind of job I could get if I lost this one. I imagined throwing myself on my sister's generosity, living in her basement, and selling pencils on the street corner to contribute to the household expenses. It was after I discovered MD Support, and especially after traveling to New York City to meet a bunch of them a couple of years ago, that my view changed. I realized that even those with the worst vision were doing very interesting and important things, far more interesting and important than anything I was doing before I lost my vision. I slipped out of my fearful state then and got on with my life in a more active and less self-conscious manner. In the 3 years since my introduction to macular degeneration, I've learned to read with low vision, found a new executive assistant job, fallen in love, moved to a new home, redecorated it, and traveled to Europe. I've also taken on a new sideline as a homestay mom and coach to English language students. As MD support member Dave Pierce says, there is life after MD. I guess I'm proving him right because my life has been getting better ever since. Who would have thought it possible? But it was possible only when I realized it wasn't just my story. I wasn't really alone. I was facing an experience that lots of others are facing too. It was only when I talked with them that everything became possible. Join a support group. As Linda's story attests, joining a support group is a very powerful way to be a part of your community. It can also be a great experience. Some people assume that support groups are only for people with talkative personalities or those who can't cope on their own. But that's not true. Support groups are for everyone. Lots of people who don't have low vision have a support group. They just don't call it that. For example, the Rotary Club, the Lions Club, the Chamber of Commerce, and small business associations are all support groups. They are places to share a common experience, get advice and tips, network and meet others, do some good for the community, and avoid having to reinvent the wheel on your own. Call your local visual rehabilitation program for support group information, parentheses. See Appendix A to find a program nearby, in parentheses, or join MD Support. Start your own. If there is no support group in your area, it doesn't mean that there aren't any seniors with low vision in your area. It just means that no one is getting the benefit of a support group. Everyone is reinventing the wheel all by themselves and feeling very alone doing it. Why not start a group? Use the following suggestions as a handy guideline. Bullet: to find members, ask your clergy to announce a new support group. Publish an announcement in the newsletter or weekly bulletin, or distribute flyers in big print at local places of worship and senior centers. Include your phone number so people can call and ask questions. Bullet: call your local paper and ask them to interview you about living with macular degeneration and profile your efforts to start a support group. Tell them there are probably thousands of other people living with low vision in the community. Bullet: ask your local senior or community center or house of worship for free meeting space. Collect public transportation information for that location and consider arranging for shared rides or taxis for members. Bullet: at your first meeting, decide on regular meeting times, topics of interest, and discussion format. You can simply share recent experiences or use sections of this book as a framework for discussions by reading passages aloud. Bullet: set some basic ground rules as a group. The National Association for the Visually Handicapped, NAVH, recommends a few and offers a large print booklet on how to start a support group, parentheses, see Appendix C for low vision catalogs, in parentheses. Some suggestions are: always introduce everyone in the room each week. Introduce yourself if you arrive late. Avoid whispering. Speak clearly enough so everyone can hear. If you can't hear someone else clearly, ask them to speak up. Keep a confidentiality rule about discussions of private matters, such as relationships with spouses. Everything said in the group stays in the group. The stories we hear and the stories we tell. New books and audio tapes that talk to, for, and about seniors seem to arrive on the bookstore shelves in a steady stream. There are new memoirs, new philosophies, such as that in Rabbi Salman Schachter Shalomi's From Aging to Saging, A Profound New Vision of Growing Older, and new reports on health like Successful Aging, The MacArthur Foundation study. Although each book takes a different approach, they all tell the same truth, that being a senior is a stage of life as important as every other stage. Seniors are a growing part of American society. Even though we may not have the bodies we used to have, we can do much more than we often assume we can, mentally and physically. And that's true of seniors with low vision, too. That's much different from the story people were telling each other 25 years ago. 25 years ago, disengagement theory was popular. Disengagement theory held that as you became a senior, regardless of your desires, you should reduce your activities, interest, and interactions with friends. The idea was that limiting yourself made accepting death easier. Not surprisingly, doctors have discovered that disengaging doesn't do much except make you miserable. In fact, they discovered not only that disengaging is bad for you, but also that engaging is good for you. Pursuing the activities you enjoy, keeping and making new friends, and following a regular physical exercise routine can actually improve your memory and your mood, strengthen your balance and your stamina, boost your immune system, and increase your overall quality of life. And it doesn't matter if you're exercising in a wheelchair or if you start when you're 90, you can still reap the benefits of engaging. The stories we tell about ourselves. Just as doctors and public policymakers tell stories about what it means to be older, we also tell stories about what it means to be ourselves. Sometimes we don't even realize we are telling stories. But whether we realize it or not, the stories we tell about ourselves are enormously influential, especially when we believe them. One of the most common stories people tell me about themselves is that they are less appealing and have less to offer others because they have low vision. I don't go down to the dining room for lunch anymore because I'm afraid I'll spill coffee on myself, Rosa Garcia admitted quietly. And besides, I can't see people too well, so I'm not sure I'll have much to say. After I talked with Rosa for a while, I discovered that she has opinions about the president and bilingual education, and she loves the Chicago White Sox. She has a wonderfully warm smile and 60 years' experience as a mother, grandmother, and parish secretary. Why wouldn't anyone want to talk with her? The blindness story. So where did Rosa get this idea that she's less appealing because she can't see as well as others do? She may have gotten it, along with her low vision, from macular degeneration. One of the challenges of AMD is that it comes with a whopper of a story, that macular degeneration causes blindness, that you can't really do anything if you're blind, and that you'll become an object of people's pity. This story isn't true, but it's so powerful that we often don't realize that we've adopted it. My good friend Natalie Steele suddenly lost vision from macular degeneration last fall. The blow was so quick and sharp that she felt she would no longer be the same person to her friends if she made it plain to them. I feel uncomfortable in restaurants, she admitted, because I don't want to take out my lighted magnifier to read the menu. People will pity me, and I don't want their pity. They will see you the way you see yourself, I said. If you pull out your magnifier with a flourish and say, "Hey, look at this. Isn't this the neatest tool? I just got it. It makes reading this menu so much easier." They'll agree, and they'll probably want one too. After all, there are lots of restaurants dim enough that it's hard for anyone over 50 to see the menu. People who know you care for you, not for what you can see. They are looking to you to tell them how to understand your vision loss. They want your story, not some generic story of blindness or some story that's foisted on you. As for strangers, they usually aren't looking. If you do run into people who dish out pity or seem uncomfortable with your vision, you can pity them right back, because if they live long enough, someday they will experience a disability too, and that day will be doubly hard for them. A month ago, Natalie took her magnifier out at a luncheon with friends. The waiter graciously appeared at her side with a beautifully designed large print menu and quietly slipped it to her. She felt as if she might start crying from elation and relief. He had treated her with immediate respect, without a drop of patronizing pity. I shouted, "Hallelujah! It's about time restaurants realize that their patrons need large print menus. Isn't this the way it should always be?" The macular degeneration slide. If you adopt the ready-made macular degeneration story that this condition means you can't really do anything, then you're at risk for what I call the macular degeneration slide. The beginning of the slide looks like common sense adjusting, but it skids pretty quickly into something much more insidious and self-limiting. John Patrick Reynolds, who goes by Pat, came to our low vision rehabilitation program this year with his daughter Sheila. He talks about how distraught he is not to renew his driver's license, Sheila told me in the hallway, but it's giving up hunting that's killing him. I have to give it up, like the driving, Pat told me when I asked him about it. I can't shoot anything. I can't see the damn target. So what do you like most about hunting? I ask. Pat talked about how much he loves being outdoors with his buddies, how they've gone up north for a week together each season for 28 years, barbecuing in the crisp night air, hiking every day, crouching in the leaves. He loves the quiet, the smell of the woods, the company of good friends. How many deer did you all shoot last season? I ask. Oh, we only got two. There's five of us, but three guys didn't get anything. So I said, you have low vision. What's their excuse? Pat started to chuckle. Seriously, I said, if you all have been hiking through the woods together for 28 years and you can still hike, why not go? Looks like you won't be the only one who doesn't hit anything. If accurate shooting was really a prerequisite for this trip, there'd only be two people on it. Don't get on macular degeneration slide. Don't give up the things that are important to you just because you think you should or because you think you need to. Explore your options first. Don't cancel your newspaper subscription before you find out if you can read it with a CCTV. Don't give up reading Reader's Digest before you try their big print edition. Don't give up a trip with your buddies before you realize that you can still go and have a great time anyway. The power of positive stories. Inspirational speakers like Norman Vincent Peale and Dale Carnegie and religious leaders like Billy Graham have been telling us for decades that positive thinking is powerful. That's why every major religious tradition teaches love and forgiveness, because these are the two most powerful stories of living, that we love and are loved, and that we forgive the failings in ourselves and others. Listen to the positive stories you hear about seniors in the world, and tell positive stories about yourself and about what you can do. We're all human. We all have doubts, insecurities, and embarrassments. We always will. But don't make them the only truth in your life. When Stories Come to Life, the inspiring guide, Secrets of Becoming a Late Bloomer, encourages all seniors to be as active as they want to be, doing the things they want to do. The book tells the story of Jack, who has macular degeneration and becomes a reading tutor for children. Jack's the third person I found with low vision from AMD who tutors reading. It's a brilliant idea, actually. In Jack's case, he decided that he'd always liked children, so he contacted a volunteer placement service. They sent him to meet with the local elementary school principal. The principal told Jack that what the school really needed was reading tutors, but she assumed that Jack's low vision meant he couldn't help. I suppose the idea is completely out of the question, she concluded. But Jack explained that the children could read to him aloud, and he would correct their pronunciation. If a child couldn't read a word, Jack would ask him or her to spell it aloud, and would help the child figure out the word. This tutoring strategy works well for Jack and his students, and it works well for other people with low vision who also tutor reading. When I read Jack's story, I realized I was reading a story about how one man managed to tell a different story about his potential than the one someone else assumed was true. And I realized that Jack's story illustrates visual rehabilitation at its best. Visual rehabilitation. As you'll discover when you turn to part 3 of this book, visual rehabilitation is about learning new skills, like reading with low vision, and using new products, like magnifiers, indoor floodlight bulbs, and CCTVs. Those are the nuts and bolts. At its heart, though, visual rehabilitation is really about saying, "Hey, world, this is what I need, and this is what I'd like to do," and then not taking no for an answer, at least not easily. It's about telling your own story of what you can do rather than listening to someone else's. As you already know, telling your own story isn't always easy. Macular degeneration can turn the world upside down, making the familiar seem unfamiliar and the safe feel precarious. It can make you much more aware of what you can't do than what you can do. Macular degeneration can make living in your own community seem like traveling in a foreign country without the glamour of flying somewhere. If you're in Greece, ordering dinner at a restaurant when you can't read the local language is exotic and exciting, but it loses its appeal if it happens in your hometown. Visual rehabilitation is about putting more things in the can-do column than the can't-do one and developing the tools to tell your own story. After all, Jack makes volunteer tutoring look simple, but he had to get to the elementary school somehow. He had to have a bit of confidence to stand up and explain how he was going to tutor reading without having his central vision. Where did those skills come from? They came from visual rehabilitation. Telling your own story. The story you tell about yourself or what you'd like to do doesn't have to be the same as Jack's. Not everyone wants to be a reading tutor or a volunteer in any capacity, although the rewards can be invaluable. When I asked Rosa Garcia what she would like to do, she said she'd like to make dinner for her family. My father likes to bowl. Grace Olson likes to play bridge with a few friends using big print cards. Sam and Rachel Weinberg like to go to the opera. They also enjoy traveling to elder hostel courses. Zelda Grant likes to raise cane in her yoga class, her support group, and her book club. She listens to the books on tape while the other members read regular paperbacks. Your own story can be whatever you want it to be, but make it about living fully in whatever ways you would most enjoy. Taking risks. We tend to recognize physical risks, like walking on icy sidewalks, as a risk, but we don't often talk about social risks as risks. Those slide under the table. But social risks are a big concern for many people with macular degeneration. No one avoids them. My father asked a mannequin for directions to the men's department. Taken the wrong bus. Taken a sip of someone else's drink. Hugged a stranger. Passed by old pals on the street and missed bowling pins. But none of these mistakes have cost him friends or dignity. The answer to almost any social situation is to be straightforward about your vision and remember that fears are fears, not reflections of what will really happen or what others will really think. Keep your sense of humor. If you can see the risks of low vision with a light-hearted eye, at least sometimes, they become much less pressing. Francie Klein, who is a marvelous cook, once made cherry pie for a party with kidney beans instead of cherries. "I had a good laugh about it," she said. "I'm lucky because my father taught me how to live with macular degeneration. He had it too. He once took a bite out of a cork coaster, mistaking it for an almond cookie. 'Dad,' I said, 'that's a coaster.' 'Well, thank goodness,' he said, I thought your cooking was going to pot. Let others know you have low vision. If you have macular degeneration, no one else can tell. People will assume you can see them, and you may pass old friends on the street. Tell everyone you know that you have low vision, and you may not recognize them. They have to say hello directly and introduce themselves. After a while, your friends and acquaintances will adjust. Newcomers may be temporarily confused, so you may always run into this problem. But any person who gets upset because you don't say hello first or respond when they waved need to have their head examined. You can tell them I said so. Besides, they'll feel foolish if they get macular degeneration and need your advice. You may think I'm kidding, but I'm not. Whatever you do, though, don't squash your own personality with worry. Go get 'em. Don't hesitate to ask for assistance. Do everything you can for yourself, and don't hesitate to ask for assistance. That sounds like contradictory advice, but it's really not. Sometimes you need a bit of assistance to do something for yourself. Better to ask a store clerk to read a price tag than to avoid shopping altogether. Better to ask a pedestrian which bus is pulling up than to avoid public transportation. Better to ask a family member or friend if your lipstick is on right than to avoid going outside. This last example touches a nerve for many people. If you've taken pride in your appearance all your life, as most of us have, you may feel chagrin to find out that you're wearing brown socks with a blue suit, or wearing a sweater that needs a trip to the cleaners. But let's be honest. It's not a character weakness to mismatch colors or have a piece of string or a spot on your clothes. Other people are unlikely to even notice, and if they do, they are unlikely to think anything of it at all. We always care more about our own appearances than anyone else does. If you are very concerned, ask others to tell you if they notice anything amiss in your appearance. Remember, it's no different from fully sighted people having a smudge of chocolate on their face or a mark on the back of their skirt. They rely on someone else to tell them, so ask them to tell you. Make a deal with your family, friends, and neighbors that you want them to tell you if they notice anything amiss in your appearance, because it helps you to know. I made this deal with my father, and we're both so used to it now that we don't think twice. He feels more comfortable knowing I'll tell him, and I feel more comfortable knowing I can tell him. Be honest with friends and family. Dostoevsky once wrote that much unhappiness has come into the world because of bewilderment and things left unsaid. I often talk with people who are reluctant to tell their friends and family much about their low vision for fear of distressing or burdening them. Sometimes they aren't being honest about small things, but sometimes those small things pile up and become big things. When Grace first lost her driver's license from low vision, she decided not to attend Bridge Club anymore because she couldn't drive herself. Since she would never know whether or not she would be a burden, Grace declined her friend Lily's offer of a ride. Besides, Grace reasoned, she couldn't see regular playing cards anymore, and she didn't want to ask the group to play with big print cards. For several weeks, Lily called her, but Grace held firm. Grace's stoic determination to remain independent was admirable, but misguided. She managed to make herself very lonely, and Lily too. I happen to know Lily, and know that she really enjoyed Grace's company, and enjoyed having dinner with Grace after Bridge Club. Grace won't come to Bridge Club anymore, Lily told me when I saw her outside the grocery store. I guess her vision is going, and she doesn't feel like playing cards. I tried to call her, but she won't come. There was something resigned and sad in Lily's voice. As she turned and walked away, I watched her tiny sloping shoulders disappear down the street. Lily cares a lot more about Grace's company, I thought, than she does about whether or not Grace can drive herself to Bridge Club, and Grace isn't listening. Fortunately, Grace finally realized that she has more to offer her friends than perfect vision. Today, Grace takes a cab to Bridge Club. The group plays with big print cards, and Lily drives her home after they've had dinner together, and they are both happier. There is nothing independent about forcing yourself to stay home in order to avoid being dependent. Don't shut out your friends. Instead, tell them what you need and look for alternative ways to do what you can do. Choosing to live. Choosing to live doesn't mean never being angry, frustrated, or upset, but it does mean recognizing your responses and realizing that you have choices. You can't choose your vision, but you still have choices. In fact, low vision asks us to do one thing above all. It asks us to make a single big choice that ultimately determines all of our other choices, our lives, and the lives of those closest to us. Tom Persky, M.A., the founder of Macular Degeneration International in Tucson, told me about a couple who came in to his program for counseling. The wife was saying that she was tired of driving all the time since her husband gave it up for macular degeneration. But it wasn't the road that was tiring her out. It was him. He was constantly yelling at her while she was trying to drive. Turn here, or slow down, or what the heck are you doing? So I told the couple a story about a gal I was dating shortly after I lost my own license in my 20s from the juvenile form of macular degeneration. We were driving somewhere, and I was yelling at this gal just the same way. She finally pulled over and told me to get out of the car. I did, and she drove off. She left me there on the side of the road for an hour. After that gal drove off, I sat on the side of that road, all burned up. But that hour changed my whole life. I realized that I had to take responsibility for my own anger and frustration and stop venting it on the people closest to me. I realized that I was free to either live or to drain the life of those around me, and I chose to live. Tom's experience rings true for everyone with macular degeneration, and for many other people as well. We will all someday sit on the side of the road with a choice. We can either choose to let vision loss or another life-changing collision darken everything we feel and do for years to come, or we can choose to live. Really live, and we can choose to let light and life and laughter and love in again. Losing the rigidity. Macular degeneration is not what anybody ordered for retirement. Nobody sits back after 40 years of work and says, what I really need now is a colossal life challenge. I'd really like some of that low vision. So when it hits, it can have a chilling effect, like a winter whiteout. Especially on a marriage. It can freeze a couple rigidly into place. I've seen husbands with macular degeneration frozen to their recliners, refusing to go anywhere, refusing to dance or walk in the park. I've seen wives with macular degeneration frozen in their kitchens, believing that if they can't make exactly the same dishes exactly the same way, then nothing is good anymore. I've seen husbands with full vision, frozen with assumptions about what their wives can and can't see. She's just not trying. She can see that, they'll say. And I've seen wives with full vision, frozen rigid with unforgiving anger, reducing their husbands to tears for trivial mistakes, for not seeing unwashed spots on the dishes, or failing to fix a doorknob correctly. You've got to lose the rigidity. It's the first thing that goes when you choose to live. There is no longer one right way to do things. There is no longer one right role. Like Inez Toscano, who learned to drive for the first time at 75 after her husband Joe got macular degeneration. You might need to take on new tasks. Or like Bixley Bennett, who revised her recipe collection to feature the dishes that are easiest for her to make with low vision. You might need to start doing the same tasks differently. Most of all, you've got to communicate. Without communicating, It's difficult to do anything but stand frozen in place. Communicating isn't easy. Sometimes it takes counseling with a therapist or clergy member. We may never see things the same way, but with compassion for ourselves and each other, we can still love and maybe even laugh together. And isn't that the essence of living? I am reminded of Sam and Rachel Weinberg when they came in one day. Sam very earnestly told me, "We've always been very independent of one another, but now we often work as a team." Rachel winked and squeezed Sam's hand affectionately. "Yes, it's teamwork," she said, "but it's also, Rachel, could you double-check those figures, please? Rachel, could you come and look at this, please? Rachel, I might need to change my name to Veronica." Losing the rigidity doesn't mean losing yourself. It's not about faking your feelings or becoming Mother Teresa. It's about choosing to live. Macular degeneration may choose our vision for us, but in the end, we choose what we see with it. The more flexible we are, the more we will see. Live through exercise. If you are older and have low vision, you may assume that you can't exercise or that it wouldn't be safe. Not true. Actually, exercise is really important for people with macular degeneration because low vision often reduces your activity and mobility. If you don't make an effort, you may become more sedentary, and that's not good for your overall health. Exercise improves your stamina and balance. It helps stabilize sleep patterns and insulin levels. It improves your outlook and mood, and it increases the length and improves the quality of your life. Not only that, but you don't have to be an athlete to reap the benefits of exercise. You just have to start exercising. The hardest part of exercising, however, is starting. The next hardest part is sticking with it for at least 1 month. After a month, your body will become more accustomed to exercising, and you will feel better on a daily basis. Stay with a program for at least 6 months to a year. If you stop, you can begin again and still benefit. Your body is remarkably elastic. You just have to give it a chance. You will see changes. Always check with your doctor before you begin an exercise program. Begin modestly and increase your program gradually. If you are not accustomed to exercising, begin with 5 minutes of walking or riding on an exercise cycle 4 or 5 days a week. When this becomes easy, increase your time gradually until you reach 20 to 30 minutes 4 to 5 days a week. Talk to your doctor about adding gentle stretches to your program to loosen the muscles that you use and prevent injury, or consider enrolling in a gentle stretching class. If you cannot walk or are worried about falling, consider lifting leg or arm weights. You can buy lightweight ones with Velcro straps for your ankles and wrists, or you can hold lightweight arm weights. You may also want to try a stationary bike, pool aerobics class, swimming, or pool jogging. See Chapter 14 for details. Live through love. Whenever I think my sexiest days are over, I think of Georgette. She came in for a visual rehabilitation appointment the day after her 75th birthday with a rock the size of Texas on her ring finger. "Congratulations," I said warmly. "You're getting married." She looked at me with some horror. "Oh, no, my dear, I'm engaged, but I am absolutely not getting married. I washed and cooked and cleaned for my husband for 47 years, God rest his soul, and that was enough work for me." "But you're engaged." "Yes, of course I'm engaged," Georgette said with enthusiasm. "It's wonderful to be engaged. We have so much fun together. We go to dinner all the time, and we just love to travel. He treats me just like a princess." "A princess?" "At first he didn't want to go out, you know, because his vision is no good either. He can't drive anymore, so he didn't want to go out. But I'll tell you, I was thinking, honey, it's not the card that makes the man. Oh, no. You know the best part? He thinks I'm beautiful, so it's just as well that he doesn't see every wrinkle. He thinks I'm as beautiful as I was 20 years ago, and sometimes when I'm with him, I even think so, too. Of course, he looks pretty good to me, too, you know, and that's not so bad. Georgette winked at me, and then she smiled this wonderful smile, and her eyes just twinkled. Until then, I hadn't realized that some things might actually be better with low vision, and Georgette had clearly found one of them. Live through reaching out. Sometimes the best defense is a good offense. Zelda Grant knew this when she started marching around the world, asking what was available for her now that she has low vision. But you don't need to be Zelda to enjoy the benefits of a good offense. You just have to be you, really you. Dolores Lopez loves going to her church services, but she couldn't see who was there anymore, which made her uncomfortable. So she hit upon a brilliant offensive strategy. She volunteers as a greeter for the services she attends, so everyone comes up to her and introduces themselves on the way in the door. And now she knows who's there, and everyone knows her. Bixley Bennett was feeling frustrated because she wasn't seeing her friends quite as often as she used to when she could drive. So she hit upon a brilliant offensive strategy. She began volunteering through her local senior center, calling folks who were homebound. I thought I would do it as a community service to keep busy, and I feel less sorry for myself by talking to people in worse straits than I am, Bixley confessed. But it's changed my life. I've made new friends. I love talking with them every week. I call them my angels. When you choose to live, choose to reach out. Look for opportunities, not for limitations. Choose a good offense. Live through faith. When I first met Evangeline, who has low vision from macular degeneration, she told me a ribald joke. At 90, she didn't miss a beat. After an hour, she announced that she couldn't stay any longer because she'd miss her luncheon date with her gentleman friend. Have you any advice for the younger generation? I asked, figuring that I could take the advice myself and be as vibrant in 25 years as she is today. She smiled and paused, clearly choosing her words. Yes, she finally said. I will tell you what I tell my great-grandchildren. Pray to the Holy Family. That's it, I said. Yes, that's it. And out she went. The Holy Family. Not being Catholic, I didn't see an immediate use for the advice. But as I met more and more people with low vision, I remembered Evangeline's words. I began to understand that faith plays an important part in how we experience life and how we experience low vision. By faith, I mean the belief that you are valuable as an individual no matter what, and that your life has meaning. Faith protects us from unnecessary anxiety. Faith forgives us and makes sense of fate. Faith is also a muscle that we can exercise. It can grow strong through time and through engagement with the activities and people you enjoy. Whatever faith you profess, I tell my patients, I have faith in you. You are our role models. We look to you, as I look to Evangeline, to see how to handle being older and losing vision. You are the first generation to do so, and we're right behind you. This is the end of Side 5, continuing on Side 6.